the Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. I know it's cheap and nasty, but you know what? We've got to do what we've got to do.
Simcha, great to talk to you guys. I wish that putting Melbourne into our weather settings would also help us to feel better, Howard. But we've got this crazy thing going on with the weather at the moment. I know we weren't going to talk to about it first up, but maybe we should at Sukkot.
Yes.
And over Sukkot, of course, weather is a big issue. In Israel, we haven't had rain for like 6 months.
Right.
And then, of course, Sukkot arrives. And in fact, yesterday, if you're saying that Melbourne is in summer, then we should be kind of winter, more or less. We're not really. I mean, it's more autumn. But yesterday was 37 degrees.
Oh,
with
my word.
Something like 80% humidity in the morning. And in the afternoon, thunderstorms and rain. The first real rain, of the season. It's called the Yore in Hebrew. Everybody was waiting for it, but not really on Sukkot. But even more important and perhaps more tragic than that, unfortunately, some people were actually struck by lightning. A family of five
who
were down on the beach near Ashkelon were struck by lightning. Some of them are really, really not well, in quite critical condition, serious condition, being treated in hospital. And so unfortunately, the Sukkot holiday has not gone very well for them. And obviously, we are praying for their safety, all these members of the family who was unexpectedly struck by lightning yesterday. But really inclement weather today. The sun is out again. It's supposed to be 32 degrees or thereabouts. So no sign of yesterday's rain. But it was really crazy to start with such a warm and humid day and then eventually progress towards the first rain of the season. We have to understand that after having not had rain for 6 months, for some people, at least the rain was quite welcome, but it would be nice to be dry in your sukkah, I suppose. Like people like to have good weather for over Sukkot. So I'm not sure that Melbourne is necessarily going to make us feel a lot better.
Indeed. But that is really, really crazy to go from that kind of a temperature to thunderstorms. And of course, thunder and lightning is not something that you are used to there. Can we just talk about this Israeli woman who was arrested in Russia? What a sad, sad story. She was arrested, as far as I recall, for being in possession of cannabis, but a very small amount, clearly not somebody who was a drug mule. She was, it was very clearly for her own use, and she's been given this crazy sentence. What is going on with this?
Well, this is a story about Naama Issachar, an Israeli who had been in India on holiday, and she had a connecting flight in Moscow. She'd flown from India via Moscow to Israel. And while she was, her luggage was being loaded, onto the connecting flight in Moscow, we understand that, the authorities in Russia managed to detect, that there was cannabis in her luggage, 9.5 grams of cannabis, apparently. For that, she was arrested in Moscow. She has been sitting in a Moscow jail now for almost a year. Over the last week or so, she stood trial and has been sentenced to 7.5 years prison in Moscow for possession of cannabis. She denies that the cannabis was hers. Even if it was hers, she didn't have access to it while she was in Russia at all, because it was in her checked luggage, which was being transferred onto another plane. It was clearly a very stupid thing of her to do, to be traveling with cannabis. Of that, there can be no doubt. It seems as if those 7.5 years is a little extreme for 9.5 grams of cannabis, which clearly could not have been smuggled, couldn't have been used for drug trafficking or for smuggling. And if anything, was going to be for her own use, which in many countries around the world these days is actually legal. Having said all of that, and having wondered why it is that she has been given this very, very serious sentence, then there comes a second part of the story, which is that the Israeli government have been trying to negotiate with the Russian government for her release, and the Russian government have in turn demanded the return of a Russian individual who's being held in Israel at the moment for cybersecurity crimes, a Russian hacker called Alexei Burkov, and he is being held in an Israeli prison. The issue is that his crimes that he is alleged to have committed have been accused to him by the American authorities. And given that the U.S. and Israel have an extradition treaty, the U.S. authorities have already requested his extradition to the U.S. to stand trial on these cybersecurity crimes. And in fact, Israel has agreed to it. So when it comes to the whole issue of exchanging Alexei Burkov for Naama Yisachar, the Israeli government has said to the Russian authorities, we are unable to do so because we've already promised the American authorities that we will extradite him to the USA in order for him to stand trial there. Of course, the Russian government is trying to avoid exactly that scenario. And as I understand it, both President Rivlin and Prime Minister Netanyahu have formally made application to President Putin to pardon Naama Yisachar and to return her to Israel immediately. But of course, the Russian authorities are standing firmly on this issue of getting Alexei Burkov back. And there seems to be more of a background to this than meets the eye, because there have been some suggestions that Alexei Burkov may well have been involved in the USA in meddling in the last US election on behalf of the Russian authorities. And so it might not just simply be cybersecurity crimes. It might be a lot more sinister than that, in terms of perhaps spying on behalf of the Russian government and getting very much involved in order to try to influence in some way those U.S. elections that took place 3 years ago. And hence the Russian government seems to be very intent on getting him back almost at any price in order to avoid him standing trial in the U.S. And now we sort of wonder whether Naama Yisachar is not a pawn in this game, whether she might not have been nabbed purposefully, or at least whether her trial might not have been constructed purposefully in order to hold her so that she could be exchange pawn for Alexei Burkov. Anyway, this story is going to pan out still, because of course there's a huge outcry against the very severe sentence that Naama Yisachar has received for a very, very small amount of cannabis in her possession. Even if she had possessed it, even if it was hers, it still seems a very severe punishment. But, you know, there are, of course, the conspiracy theorists who claim that the Russian government has done this on purpose in order to force Israel's hand on the issue of Russian hacker Alexei Burkov. So we will see how that pans out. A very, very sad story for the Yisachar family and for Naama in particular, who, while having done something which is not very smart, is paying more than a heavy price for something which seems unjust.
Terrible price, indeed. Very, very sad story. Can we just get a bit of a coalition update? Is there one?
No coalition at all. And in fact, of course, yesterday, immediately after the end of the first day of Sukkot, when some people got back to work, I mean, admittedly, these Cholom Moed days of Sukkot are kind of not really full working days, and certainly, government will not be working during these days. But the clock is ticking. The clock is ticking on the formation of the coalition, and the 3 weeks that Prime Minister Netanyahu was given in order to form the coalition by President Rivlin expires next week on Thursday. Chag or no chag. That's the way that things are happening. And of course, yesterday, Prime Minister Netanyahu's enemies were suggesting that for the 12th consecutive day, he's made absolutely no effort at all to consult with potential coalition partners in order to try to form a government. So what these people are accusing him of is holding on to the mandate that was given to him by President Rivlin without actually doing anything with it. He's just holding it in order to deny somebody else the opportunity to form the government. And so the accusers are suggesting that he really should be handing that mandate back if he's unable to exercise it in any way. And if it's obvious that he's not going to be able to form a government by next week on Thursday, why not already hand the mandate back now? The answer seems to be, at least in the opinion of some of Netanyahu's friends within the Likud, the answer seems to be that he's hoping to hold on to the mandate in the in the hope that the Attorney General might come up with some pronouncements regarding the legal case against Netanyahu between now and then. And he feels that if the Attorney General gives some positive news, which will perhaps either tone down or even suggest that further legal case cannot be pursued against Netanyahu, that might give him the opportunity that he really needs to push the buttons and to form the coalition quite quickly, because then the argument that so many people are relying upon, that he's facing these legal charges and therefore is not really qualified to head the next government, those accusations will go away. So I think that Netanyahu is trying to, at least according to what some of his Likud friends are saying, he's trying to play a long game in the hope that the Attorney General will come up with something that will help his cause between now and next week on Thursday. In my humble opinion, I think that that's very unlikely, not only because I think it's too soon after the initial hearings, and we were told that no further comment or no further information would be forthcoming from those hearings until the middle of December, but also because this time of year with the Chag and with Chol HaMoed means that, you know, the legal system is not really working at the moment. So it would be a huge surprise to me if Attorney General Mandelblit decided to make any announcement at all regarding this legal case between now and next week. So my expectation is that the 3 weeks will run down, that Netanyahu will not succeed in putting together his coalition. He will be forced to hand the mandate back to the president next week on Thursday. And then, of course, everybody will be waiting to see what the president does next. The expectation is that he'll probably hand it to Benny Gantz, the leader of the Kahol Lavan party, for him to form a coalition. But obviously we'll have to see how the president responds. And in the middle of all of this, of course, is Avigdor Lieberman, who's still being accused of holding out and being the person who not only caused the second round of elections by not being willing to sit in a coalition the first time around, but still being not willing to sit in any coalition, therefore preventing the formation of government this time around. I think he's just sticking by his guns, but of course there are some people who don't necessarily agree with the position that he's taking. So I think that that's kind of a summary, a sad summary of where we're up to on the issue of forming a coalition.
Absolutely, absolutely crazy that this is just dragging on. Mim says, if you can't do the time, don't do the crime. And of course that was talking about our little, our story a little bit earlier. Can't say I agree with that to that extent. And, of course, in principle that's absolutely right. But as long as the time matches the severity of the crime, otherwise we have a very, very much broken system. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. It is 8 o'clock. We'll catch you tomorrow, same time, same place, for the latest news from Israel. This is Where I Love and Leave You. I'll be back tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Howard Saxton and Benji Shulman will be with you through the next hour, or Howard for the next 45 minutes. He's leaving at 8:45. But thanks, Benji, for standing in for me for the next hour.